Welcome to the Lab Up Leaders series, a showcase of global change agents and experts in healthcare and laboratory management. Here's your host, Lab Up Global Founder, Robert Farias.
We'd like to welcome Divine Ajimanladi to the podcast. Divine, nice to meet you. How are you doing?
Thank you. I'm fine. And how are you doing too, Robert?
Very well. Thank you. Divine, how about we introduce you to the audience, and if you can get started by giving us a bit of your academic background, please.
Okay, so thanks, Robert. I think I have to thank you for this opportunity. I started my basic education in Somanya at Beto Preparatory School. So Somanya is in the eastern region of Ghana. After my basic education, I progressed to the senior high school, where I read science at Oforiapeni Senior High School, also in the eastern region of Ghana. From the senior high school, I studied at the Kwame Nkrumah University of Science and Technology, which is, of course, that's the only science university in Ghana. It's debatable, but yes. It's the intention for putting up that school was to help increase the number of science students that are that go to the university at the end of the year. So after in KNUST, I read medical laboratory science, of course, for my first degree, and that's between somewhere 2012 to 2016. During this period, of course, I took a lot of leadership positions. I know we'll come to that, but from there, I went ahead to read the Doctor of Medical Laboratory Science program. It's a professional doctorate program. I had to combine work with that. Frankly, I was doing a part-time work while studying my doctorate degree, taking my doctorate degree. And from there, I had to take a master in public health at the University of Ghana. And I'm currently taking my MBA at both Leicester University and Accra Business School. Currently, yes.
Great. So, Divine, let me ask you your motivation for entering the MLS program. What triggered you to choose that degree?
Yes. So, growing up, I wanted to read medicine, and then I was offered medical laboratory science. When I got into first year, the plan was to look at what the course entails, then I can take a decision whether to continue or think about pursuing the degree in medicine. After the first year, I got enthused by the course structure, and so I stayed in the program. And I completed, and it's no regret for me at all. I think that the reading the course has really helped shape my destiny, because if I had to have read another course, probably I wouldn't have been doing what I've grown to love to do. Yeah.
Sure. So let's talk about your first professional experiences once you completed your undergraduate. Were you doing some internship, or did you have some type of placement, or did you go right into employment from your undergraduate?
Yeah. So I was, luckily for me, I was the president of the student association, National Student Association. Then we call it FGMELSA. So for that year group, I was the national president. I had to do a presentation at a national program. And after that presentation, I got the ability to meet, the opportunity to meet some key players in the area that I'm in now. And so the conversation started from there. And one of the past presidents, who is Mr. Jampuma, actually helped me to move from the lab. But I started with my internship, of course, as any MLS student. I started my internship actually at the Confanochi Teaching Hospital. And immediately, or close to the end of the service period or internship period, I moved into sales and marketing, medical devices sales and marketing. Yes.
And so let's discuss that transition itself. So there's a lot of pulls to be at the cutting edge and to be familiar with what's out there. What was the main driver for you to make that switch?
This is, I'm a person who loved to sell. I've loved to sell. While I was in school, I was still trying to sell some hematology reagents and to some labs around. So I naturally, I'm someone who loved to sell. So once Mr. Jampuma told me about the opportunity to join my first company, that's DC Laboratory Product Limited. I didn't waste any time at all. I had to just grab it. It wasn't easy because when I was transitioning from the lab into sort of sales and marketing, which is more has to do with business, some of my colleagues and some of senior professionals tried to talk to me about not doing that, not leaving the lab, you know. But the drive to impact my world in that area of business was stronger, so I had to try to convince them. Some of them now have seen the benefits of me moving out and then coming back to support them, even so that we collectively achieve the same purpose that we all desire to achieve, which is to produce or to give out credible and reliable medical laboratory results. Yes.
So from DCL, what were your next steps, man?
Yes. So from DCL, I moved to from DCL. In DCL, I got some good opportunities. I had the opportunity to work with the Safi team, who were more into gene experts. So I was working as their clinical application specialist. At the same time, Safid had to expand their market base in West Africa. So I was doing some work for them, as in getting the information on the ground, also related to troubleshooting, related to clients' feedback and all that. I was doing that. And I got that opportunity from my work with DCL. So from doing that, I had to move to BD, which is my current company. BD is Becton Dickinson and Company, where I work as a territory and clinical application specialist for basically English speaking West Africa. And I've been in this role for almost four years now. Yes. So that is it. The area is basically about clinical sales. So whatever we do, although I'm learning the business terms and I'm trying to be a businessman in a business area, but within me is that science background, which is the MLS background. And that is the driving force behind everything I do in the area. Yes.
So let's talk, Divine, about what you're currently seeing when you're visiting these facilities. And actually, sorry, before I get there, let me ask you a question. Because during this time, you've been back and forth into studies, and that's when you completed your doctorate, and also when you've gone off to your MPH and now subsequently to your MBA. Could we describe what was your drive to say, let's go on and continue for a PhD? What triggered that?
Yeah, I mean, you can't get stuck. You can't be okay with whatever level you get to. So I wanted to just be as good as whatever I can be in every field or every area I find myself in. So the fact of the matter is that for most of these programs, aside the doctorates, I took them on weekend basis. So my weekends were off. I didn't have any weekend for three years. I wasn't including Sundays. I'm a Christian, but I had to let go of my church services, and I concentrated on getting this knowledge that will make it necessary, or that will help me to be able to make the impact that I would want to make in the various fields that I find myself in. So frankly, it hasn't been easy, but it has to do with determination and the drive to get better by the day. So that is it. That I wouldn't stop when I'm tired, but I have to stop when I'm done. And that has been the driving force. Yeah.
Thanks, Divine. So for, in terms of your PhD, was there any particular focus? What was the main area that you did your research on or focused on?
So basically I was doing I did a research in knowledge perception and screening of local dye workers regarding urinary bladder cancer in Ghana. Okay, so this tie and dye, we have this guys called tire dye workers in Ghana. They use a lot of dyes in coming up with cloth for women to put on. And in the process of their work, because they are exposed to carcinogenic products, and we had to do some testing and also screen a lot of them to be able to come up with which of the dyes are right, which of them we think that wouldn't help their cause. Yeah. Uh-huh. So that is the area I did the research on. Yeah.
Interesting. And so a PhD wasn't enough. You decided to run an MPH after that. So let's talk about what triggered the MPH.
Yeah, so basically, as I said, so the doctorate degree is actually, we call it MLSD, is a professional doctorate degree. So when I was done with that, I thought, okay, when it comes to medical laboratory science, I know everything I should know around the area, at least to some extent. Why don't I take the public as a whole and study about their health? And so I decided to take up master's in public health at the University of Ghana, and I got enrolled on a weekend basis, and thankfully I went through. The drive was to be able to understand epidemiology, understand disease control, understand health education, and the rest of the courses that I do. And it's been an eye-opening course for me. I learned a lot for the period that I was in the University of Ghana School of Public Health. Yes.
Great. And so let's talk about, so when you take all those experiences and you roll them into an organization the size of BD, yes. And then you have a specific focus around client support and client applications around account management as well, I imagine, across West Africa. You must have seen or you can see a sense of trends that are taking place. Now, naturally, the last 2 years have probably been affected quite a bit by COVID as well.
Yeah.
But can you just describe a sense of what you're seeing in the different jurisdictions that you're working with from the lab perspective, and anything that you see as a trend or things that people are specifically focusing on moving forward?
Yes, yes, yes. So COVID has its positives and negatives. I think for me, we have to concentrate on the positives, what we have learned from the period or the pandemic, okay, that we've been through. We are not through yet, but at least it's been an eye-opening time for us. When I go to the labs now, unlike before, medical laboratory scientists, and generally not just even the lab, but even in the health facilities, health professionals have become more safety conscious. Before or prior to COVID, you go to some facilities and I'm not saying all facilities, but you go to some facilities and you could see that people are not really going by the safety precautionary measures that they need to be able to safeguard themselves against infectious agents and all that. Currently, that is not the case. You go to labs and the scientists themselves are very much aware of the situation they find themselves in. And that is good. The other side is also, at the whole, I think that now management is now putting in some good amount of funds or channeling some good amount of funds into laboratory practice, unlike before, because they are beginning to realize the need for improved technologies such as the PCR, and all that. So you could see some increase funds allocation going to some of the labs, unlike before. So that's also good for the lab. That's also good. And so for me, COVID has been sort of, it has awakened our system, our health system, to look at diagnostics. And so for me, it's a win for the lab. And I think the lab should take this going forward. The lab should rely on the kind of recognition that they have been given to the COVID process to improve on instrumentation and to improve on the practices. So basically, that is what I can share in that regard. Yes.
And Divine, let me just ask you a question, just curiosity. So you're dealing in a lot of different regions, I presume a lot of different types of facilities as well. I imagine that there are some, you know, larger maybe referral hospitals or teaching hospitals, and yes, then all the way down, I imagine, the smaller center laboratories. Yes. Do you notice any distinctions of where people's focus is across those? Obviously, in terms of types of tests and maybe volume of tests that they handle, but anything in particular that you see as a trend between the scales of facilities?
Yes. The difference is actually huge, and yes, there are facilities that do not currently do microbiology, for example. A lot of facilities do not do microbiology. Some of them still have basic instrument to be able to run their tests. They are still doing manual stuff. Okay, especially for facilities in, to say, remote areas, okay? But when you come to the cities where we have the tertiary facilities and the teaching hospitals and all across West Africa, I see an improvement in instrumentation, and the drive technology, lab technology, to be able to produce very credible lab results. Okay, so it has to do with investments not really reaching, in my opinion, the very remote areas, which also affects the labs of those hospitals. Okay, so that is the difference I see. Yes.
And from a labor force perspective, so you're dealing with MLS holders that are sitting both in a rural side or within a capital and you know, 10 million plus population cities in some cases. Do you find that there's a distinction? So I've always found this in my experiences. I found that really what makes these facilities run is those individuals. And you can be in a rural setting and find someone who's just as dedicated and just as focused as those working in the cities, and doing quite well for the equipment that they have with them and the settings that they have. But have you noticed a distinction between the type of people or the type of people who tend to cater to one setting or another?
Yes. So it's one of the issues now. Because, you know, as in our region, one of the issues we have is with the workforce moving to the rural areas. Mm-hmm. Because in those areas, basically social amenities and sometimes even schools for wards for kids or wards of these professionals to attend becomes an issue. So although we have, I wouldn't say that professionals in those communities are not up to the task. I wouldn't say that. Some are very good, but we have a lot of the very good ones, very, very good ones, who wouldn't accept. They wouldn't accept posting to the remote areas, and that has been a big issue. Okay, and it's because of amenities, because of opportunities. People feel those in the cities have more opportunities compared to you working in the rural community in the lab. You're sitting somewhere and it's like everyone has forgotten about you, and that is the feeling I have. But we have equally good people, professionals working in some of these remote labs who are really doing well. Yes.
Okay. So Divine, you've managed from an academic perspective, you've hit quite a few areas that many current MLS students consider as their future. You've had some time at the bench. You've had time in the corporate world as well, or in the manufacturer's world as well. Can you give some advice, if you were to give advice to students and early careerists right now who are thinking, okay, I'm just starting my MLS degree, or I've just wrapped up my MLS degree, what's next? What are your thoughts, any advice or suggestions you can provide to our students?
Okay, so in advising the student, let me state that leadership is very important. Leadership is very important. And leadership here doesn't mean you leading a group of people alone. You have to start by leading yourself. Okay, you have to start leading yourself. Even as a young boy, what really helped me was my dad really pushed me into leadership positions, and he prepared me towards those positions. So right from class one, I can remember in my basic school, I became the class prefect. When I got to form JHS 2, I was made the school prefect in the primary school, in the JHS. When I started my SHS, that's a senior high, I was the class prefect. And then the final year, I became the senior boys prefect. When I got into the university, I became the course president, the class president. And then in level 300, I became the KNUS Students Association president for the Medical Laboratory Students Association. And then I became the national president. But throughout this leadership processes and the journey, I've realized that I had to really work on myself in order to meet all this and impact. Okay, so I've seen the same even in corporate world and other areas of my life. When I was in my master's, for example, I also became the president of the Students Association at the School of Public Health. And I noticed that a lot of student leaders and a lot of students today are just, they want to win a position. They want to win an election. They want to lead other students, forgetting about they leading themselves. What do I do so that in the next 5 years, myself, I'll be competitive? What do I do so that in the next 10 years, I'll achieve this? And what do I need to get there? What are the courses I need to read? Who are the people I need to see to either mentor me or direct me as to what to do? So for me, leadership is very important. And for me, inspirational leadership is what I always preach, that you have to start by leading yourself. Once you do that, you have an idea about what you are doing yourself, and then you try to channel the same to every organization or a group of people that you lead as a student leader or even in a leadership position at all. Then I also advising, of course, students, I also want them to try to adapt and sacrifice. Adaptation is very key, and sacrificing is also very important. When I started the role with DCL, okay, when I moved from the lab, I mean, people see me today, and they may think that I just moved from nowhere to this stage. You know, because I'm a representative, I'm a clinical application specialist for a multinational company, and I represent a number of countries. And some of these students or some professionals may want to be like, oh, this guy from nowhere. But you know, I had to make a lot of adaptation sacrifices when I moved into the area, because at that time, there were benefits that I enjoyed today that I wasn't enjoying then, but I had to take a decision to just be on course, learn the trade, and improve, hoping that with time, things will get better. And so that is one thing I like to tell students. You have to adapt and sacrifice. And once you are ready to do that, together with you leading yourself, you can achieve almost everything that you set your mind to achieve. So that is what I have for students. Yes.
Anything topical, Divine? Anything that you think is sort of going to impact the future of where they'll be functioning in the lab sense that they should focus on? Should they be tailoring themselves to particular areas of study or particular particular upcoming diagnostic approaches or fields.
Yeah. So basically, because I'm in the space, and I would say molecular, and it's the problem that a lot of these labs and professionals have with molecular platforms has to do with the costs involved. And management would want labs to cut down costs so that they can at least raise some good funds for the facilities. Mm-hmm. But I think the labs should now be looking at molecular for those medical lab scientists who are not trained on molecular platforms and molecular processes. They would have to take that development personal, because it will get to a time for you to work in labs, tertiary labs that are regarded as top-notch labs. You need to be able to do PCR, you need to be able to do DNA extraction and all that. So I would advise that, medical laboratory professionals should now be looking at that area. And then secondly, the area that I'm in now, thankfully I have convinced some of my friends to join me in the area now. What they are into medical devices, medical technology sales and marketing. They are medical professionals as well. But I would advise them, especially the young ones who are fresh graduates, to consider moving into this area of their lives, that I'm in now, and try to also explore. You can always explore. If you, after some time, you feel it's not a good area for you, you can always go back to your main laboratory practice. But I feel that what I do now also plays a part of what the healthcare system needs. Because once a professional is advising the lab on an instrument, and that includes how to even store the reagents and all that, based on what I know I learned in class, it adds up to the result, the quality of results that are produced. Okay, so one, I would want them to look at my area, which has to do with medical device, medical technology. And then I also want them to take molecular stuff very seriously, because it looks like that's the future for medical laboratory practice.
Yeah. Great. And Divine, before I ask you some other questions, I would like to bring up, if I may, is the Inspire Them Foundation. Can you talk to that a little bit?
Okay. Yes. So Inspire Them Foundation. Yes. So I came up, I have been thinking about, okay, leadership is not about a position or whatever. You just have to find a way to impact and bring change. So I've put together a team of medical doctors. So I have some lawyers. I have some other professional teachers and all, and nurses. And what we do basically is to lead a team to be able to visit rural schools in rural areas. These kids probably haven't met a lawyer before. Some haven't met a doctor. Some haven't met a medical laboratory scientist. Some do not know what these areas are about. And so what we do is to try to inspire them, to tell them to be proactive. The main message is to let them be proactive and not reactive. Mostly what they do is that some of them feel people get to where they are as a result of just luck or sheer luck or something, but not sticking to the books, reading and investing into whatever they do. So we try to bring this message home to students, especially in the rural areas, to sort of encourage, inspire them. And so that's what we do at Inspire Them Foundation. And overall, I think we are doing very well. We have lined up schools for the year that we have to visit, and continue inspiring these students. Let me use myself as an example. When I was in the primary school, I remember some old students of my school came to talk to us. And to be frank with you, the kind of inspiration I had after that speech, at the morning devotion. Normally in the primary school in Ghana, you have the morning assembly, or what we call the morning devotion. And a gentleman was, an old student was asked to talk to us. And I went to the classroom that day, really pondering over all that he said. Those words really played a huge role in my activity, how I took my studies seriously after that encounter. So I felt there are a lot of students in rural areas who need this kind of inspiration, yes, from some of us. And so that is why I decided to put together the Inspire Them Foundation. Yeah.
Well, that's a great initiative on your part, Divine. I just want to make sure to highlight that throughout this episode for others to potentially get some suggestions of what they can do back home as well. Divine, so I'd like to just give you an opportunity that we offer for all our guests, which is to recognize any mentors or people who have been particularly supportive in your journey. So I'll let you take it away.
Okay. Thank you, Robert. So you see, I have learned at a very young age that being ungrateful is a sin. If you try to be ungrateful, basically you are trying to say you've done it all by yourself and you can do it alone. Meanwhile, there are lots of great men and women who have really played key roles in my life, even up to now. And let me take this opportunity to appreciate and say a very big thank you to some of them. Let me start with my own father. He's been very instrumental. He was a teacher. He's a retired teacher now, Mr. Ajimai. And he taught me a lot. He taught me leadership. And then I also want to thank Mr. Thomas Jampuma. He is actually the chief medical laboratory scientist now at the Komfanochi Teaching Hospital in Ghana, Kumasi. And he's a gentleman who took special interest in me and my activities as a student leader. And we were close because he has special interest in me. And he played a very huge role in my transition from the medical laboratory to the current role that I'm in the business or corporate world. So I want to say thank you to Mr. Thomas Jampuma. He's a father and a mentor. Then I also want to say thank you to my former boss. He's Dr. John Kennedy. He owns this year Laboratory Product Limited. He exposed me, he gave me a lot of opportunities. And I believe his guidance, his support has gotten me this far. And then to my immediate past boss, who is Nana Yawampiamwa at BD. He's no more with BD, but I want to say thank you to him. When I joined BD, he really also supported me. So I know he will listen to this, and I just want him to know that I thank him so much. Then probably last but not least, I also want to thank everyone at BD. Currently, I work at BD. So I want to thank everyone from Jonathan to Miriam. Miriam is currently my boss, and to our general manager, Mr. Ian Wickfield. I also want to thank him so much, and Shane, and everyone at BD, both West Africa and BD Africa. I want to say thank you to all of them. Yes.
Well, thank you very much for your time today, Divine. We appreciate sharing your story and helping us gather some insights and thoughts for people who are just entering the field. And certainly congratulations on the steps you've taken so far. You're still relatively early in your career, so it's quite an impressive amount of accomplishments on your end. And we look forward to seeing your progress in the years to come.
Thank you very much, Robert. And let me say thank you too for this opportunity. Actually, I wasn't expecting this. It didn't cross my mind. You know, when I saw your message, I was like, wow, you know, so thank you very much. And probably, hopefully in the next 5 years, we'll come back here and talk about probably better stuff that I've done with my life. So thank you very much.
Certainly, I expect that, Divine. Thank you.
All right. Thank you too. Bye.
To make a suggestion of someone that would make a great guest or topic you would like to hear more about, please visit us at labop.org. That's labopp.org.